listener production. This is Global Truths with Dr. Keith Suter. Join us each week as we break down one issue in global politics so that you can understand what's happening in the world right now, but also what's likely to happen in the future. Our host, Dr. Keith Suter, is one of Australia's leading commentators on global affairs and geopolitics. My name's Sasha Barbagat. I'm a journalist. The globe's become so reliant on electricity and grids, and understandably so. It powers our homes and hospitals, helps supply clean drinking water, keeps us connected, and allows us to work. But experts are warning of an impending disaster that would see the world's power supply catastrophically fail. This week, Keith and I are discussing, is there anything we can do to avert this disaster? Keith, starting off, I'm not going to lie, this sounds very doomsday-esque, but experts are becoming increasingly worried about this. Could you explain to us how it would happen?
Yeah, so we're talking about an EMP, which is an extreme electromagnetic interference, which causes systems using electricity to fail when the load gets too high. So these are devices that are controlled by chips or computers. Too much electricity runs through the system and the system collapses. You've got a number of different EMP possibilities. One is a ground level attack released by a nuclear burst, for example, that could potentially impact power lines, transformers, and other critical devices. You've also got other forms of interruption that could occur, even from a sunburst, from the sun hitting our communication satellites, etc.
Wow.
Including, you know, your MasterCard, etc. Suddenly you'll find yourself, you know, the lights will go down, but also you'll be without MasterCard access, or your car won't be able to start. And you've also got the whole risk of some sort of surprise nuclear strike by Russia, China, or North Korea, which will aim to disrupt the electrical supply. Going back to the experience of COVID, suddenly we realized the things that we took for granted really need more examination. It's
yes.
A bit like supply chains.
Mm.
I've lectured on supply chains over the years. Students roll their eyes. The big challenge is to try to keep them awake. Suddenly, supply chains become one of the most interesting topics.
Absolutely.
You know, as we run out of, for example, trying to buy a new car in Australia, very difficult. So supply chains have now become much more a matter of common concern. And I think what this article is trying to argue is that the US Congress has been examining this now for almost 20 years.
Mm.
So people are aware of what is potentially going to go wrong. It's interesting. In this article, which is called An Electrical Meltdown Looms, How Can We Avert Disaster by Keith Harari, what he gives the example of, 1965, we get in the United States the Northeast blackout that left 30 million people without power because there was a transmission line relay which was not set properly. In 2003, you get the Northeast blackout affecting 50 million people, which was reportedly tripped by a single point of failure when a tree touched a power line.
Yeah.
Also, of course, there's the famous 1977 New York City blackout, which was caused by two circuit breakers tripping when lightning hit a substation. So as you said in your introduction, we're more and more reliant upon electricity, but that is also a point of vulnerability for us.
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask you, because to understand the scope of how massive this could be if it happened, how much of the world's infrastructure is controlled and supplied by electricity? Do we have anything that works without a chip or a grid or a power line?
Well, it depends where you are.
Yeah.
In the case of Australia or the United States, which is what this article covers, a lot of the United States is reliant upon some sort of grid system. Mm. So in the United States system, there's an East system and a West system, and there's Texas. Texas has got its own system. And then when it went down during the winter a few months ago, they couldn't draw on power from anywhere else because they weren't connected to either of these two national grid systems. And of course, you've also got to build in the whole issue of climate change.
Yes.
They were getting so many people now complaining about irregularities in the weather. So in fact, the weather's going to get more and more difficult for us, and that will create its own vulnerability for the supply of electricity.
Because our problem, I feel, in Australia isn't the cold, it's the heat.
Yeah. Yep.
And we're, you know, they're going, oh, okay, there's a chance of blackouts today, or there's a chance of blackouts tomorrow. I mean, what can we do? We need this power source.
Well, you do. Now, my view is that you go off the grid.
Yeah.
Right. So here I am beginning to sound like a hippie, as you can see, wearing a suit and tie.
And the suspenders. Don't forget
I'm an elderly hippie. Let's get back to the meta-narrative. You've really got two separate ways of looking at today's supply issues, including supply of money. One is that you concentrate, as a matter of convenience, everything into, for example, a mobile phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I see, when I come into the city each day by train, I see the number of people who wave their mobile phone over the ticket that you
wrote. Guilty. Guilty. I do it. Yep.
You've combined your mobile phone with the Sydney Transport ticketing system. You've got others who have their bank account through their mobile phone. Now, this means you're concentrating all of your assets into one device. In this case, it's the mobile phone. Now, the risk with a national grid system is that, again, you are concentrating power on that national system. Now, there are economic arguments for that. You know, you've got, it's going to be cheaper, at least in the short term. It'll be a disaster for you if anything happens to your mobile phone.
Oh, I know
you
it.
You won't be able to get home.
I know
unless
it.
Unless you find a way of buying a ticket or whatever. That's one way of doing it. The alternative way, which is the philosophy that I try to follow, because I have a separate card, for example, for transport, I don't have any financial transactions on my mobile phone. As Andy Gove, one of the founders of Intel, used to say, only the paranoid survive. So I'm one of the paranoid along with Mr. Gove. I keep everything separate.
Yeah.
Now, that means there's a huge amount of duplication and all the rest of it. But I know that if one thing goes down, other things will still be okay. And I think it's this distributed system which will be the way of the future.
Mm.
I remember years ago getting involved in a debate about the future of nuclear power. And the argument was that every home would have their own nuclear power station.
Wow.
That's the ultimate in distributed power. Luckily, that wasn't followed through. But it is interesting how, for example, people are using their roofs to power their homes.
Yes.
Because of the solar panels.
Absolutely.
So we are getting a little more into thinking about sustainability and living more off the land. This article warns that in the case of America, only a fairly small percentage of Americans would cope with a complete collapse of the electrical system, however that was caused. They are people already living on the land and growing their own food.
That's right. And returning to this idea of the EMPs, one of the things I read in the article was that some countries are looking to use this as a weapon of warfare. How would they do that?
Well, they would knock out the communication satellites or the undersea cables, which we looked at a few months ago. You'd knock those out, and that would be a way, obviously, of disrupting people's way of life. Because of this tendency, we're going back to the previous point, of trying to link things together, we do make our own life more hazardous.
Yes.
For example, as cars become more mechanized, the value of their components actually is greater than the amount of metal that's in the car.
Right.
But that then makes them vulnerable to carjackings. And there is a very suspicious case of an American journalist driving his Mercedes, Michael Hastings, whose car suddenly accelerated, blew up and hit a tree. The police burned the body and said to the next of kin, we've got some ashes here. You want to come and collect them?
Oh, my God.
So there's a real question mark over what happened to Michael Hastings. One of the American experts on terrorism said, well, this may be an early example of a carjacking. In other words, that you're able to take control of the electrical system within the car from a distance, accelerate it, and get it to run into a car.
Wow.
Into a tree.
A tree or into anything.
So that's carjacking. We think we're making our cars more useful by, you know, all the electronic components. And don't forget, data is also the new oil. I was reading an interesting survey about electrics in a car. When you sell your car, you've got to make sure you remove all the data collection from it.
Right, of course.
One of the things that they collect is actually how you're seated. So they've got an idea of your backside and how often you move and the rest of it. That's all fed into, this is all part of the new data. And as we've seen in this country, it just becomes so tempting for companies to collect and store data and saying, oh, well, we'll find a use for it later. The Australian government, in the so-called war on terror, which has destroyed civil liberties in this country, they are forcing people, the suppliers of IT, to hold on to our data with the suggestion is, well, we may want to call it in later to see what a suspected terrorist was doing on the internet. All that is being stored.
Wow.
And I think it's quite unnecessary. But Canberra, because we're run now by a terror industrial complex, Canberra is saying, oh, no, we need to maintain all that data. But that makes us more vulnerable to people going around hunting for data, which they will then use for ransomware purposes.
You're listening to Global Truths with Dr. Keith Suter, the podcast in which we delve deeper into a global issue you might not be aware of. Today, we're discussing EMPs and their potential to cause disaster. Now, the conversation has turned from not if this happens, but to when. Can you give us more details on what discussions are taking place behind closed doors right now about it?
This has been a matter of discussion, as you say, behind closed doors for the last 20 years. I think that the reason why it's not attracted too much publicity is because governments obviously don't want to scare you.
Mm. It is scary.
It is scary, yeah. Absolutely, because suddenly you'll find your own credit card not working.
And what are you supposed
to
do?
Or your car not working.
Yeah.
You know, these are the risks that you run. So they are looking at ways in which they could strengthen the system. In the United States, for example, there's the Instant Access Network, which is in Maryland, which is focusing on hardening the critical systems against electromagnetic pulses and developing local microgrids that will function independently, even in the worst case scenario. So it's that notion of being independent.
Would that be like smaller grids that supply smaller areas and therefore if there's an attack, it's not going to be the whole of Sydney, it'll be Bankstown or Penrith.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, and microgrids may well be a good way to go. Again, it goes back to this grand narrative that instead of centralizing everything, we look at local distribution points. So that may be the saving grace for us when it comes to magnetic pulses. It's interesting that EMP systems integrator Charles Manto says that if we can safeguard 10% of the American critical infrastructure, it could potentially secure as much as 85% of the economy.
Wow.
When you look at the American infrastructure, it's very worrying indeed. They've got 50,000 bridges that are unsafe to travel over, but they can't be closed down because there's no money to rebuild them.
Wow.
America is crumbling.
Mm.
A lot of its infrastructure goes back to the war years or the immediate post-war years and the Eisenhower administration when they had the, you know, the road network, etc. So a lot of America has got very old infrastructure. And because the Americans are sort of inflicting financial anorexia nervosa on the government by refusing to pay taxes, this is the so-called taxpayers' revolution that began in 1978. It just means that there isn't enough money in the system to rebuild this. So Americans are getting more money to buy cars, but they're not putting enough money into creating good roads or good bridges.
Yeah, right. In terms of, again, going back to like what we can do to kind of prevent this, we've discussed microgrids. Is that kind of it? Are we just going to be susceptible to these sort of attacks because of how our society works?
Well, I think we are going to be susceptible because of the way in which our society operates. I think that we can do a lot more local self-reliance. As I say, I avoid centralizing items. I like a distributed system, but I'm not growing my own vegetables. I live in a part of Sydney where we don't have a vegetable garden. And this is one of the things which they say in the article, that if dehydration, starvation, disease and environmental threats don't kill most of us relatively quickly, we are likely to turn on each other.
Yes.
And particularly America being so heavily armed with more guns than there are people, you can imagine a Mad Max situation very easily arising in the United States.
We talked a little bit before about, you know, the idea of using EMPs in warfare. Instead of shooting guns at each other, would we just be wiping out power grids in other countries and leaving people to suffer?
Well, that's exactly now what the Russians are doing. If you look at what's going on in Ukraine, Russia has clearly lost the land war in the eastern part of the country. And so they're doing badly through conventional warfare. So what they're seeking to do is to destroy infrastructure, which is contrary to the laws of war. But you blow up railways and power plants, etc., as a way of just making life so difficult for people and starving them and freezing them now that winter is coming in. So yes, that this is a form of warfare. You destroy a country's infrastructure.
And do you think that's helping raise the awareness level of the issue of EMPs to a global audience where before some people might not have thought about it?
I fear for a lot of people, it's just so frightening, they don't want to think about it.
Good point.
They want to work out, you know, let's talk about Hollywood film stars or soccer results or whatever, because it just seems to be so grim to think about the potentials of what could happen. But it's a bit like the whole issue of supply chains that are now top of mind, thanks to COVID. I think that the whole issue of infrastructure resilience needs to get far more attention. One of the issues that I've touched on so often is the fact that Australia is not honouring its international obligations to stockpile enough fuel in this country. There is an obligation to stockpile a certain amount of petrol in Australia, and we are not honouring that. So we are making ourselves vulnerable by short-term economic thinking.
Well, hopefully it's not something any of us experience through our own lives, but as you said, Keith, we need to sit up and pay attention to these things. So thank you for enlightening us.
Thank you.
Global Truths is presented by Dr. Keith Suter and me, Sasha Barber-Gatt. Audio production by Niall Fernandez. Theme and original music by Matt Nikolic. Listener.